Firefighters continue to arrive to fight growing fires in western Montana. Good evening, I'm Courtney Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Jovetic, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Flathead reporter Catherine Fry looks at the effects of climate change on bull trout. Capital reporter Dan Boyce tells us about a meeting today among top education leaders. And in our feature interview, News Director Sally Mock talks with former Governor Brian Schweitzer about why he chose not to run for the U.S. Senate and about his ties to two alleged dark money groups. Firefighters have not yet begun to attack a 150-acre wildfire burning in the Gold Creek area north of Missoula. Forest Service spokesman Boyd Hartwig says the fire is burning in the northeast corner of the Rattlesnake Wilderness and also on some tribal and private land. No homes are threatened. A Type 2 Incident Command team arrived today to plan how to fight the fire. Firefighters are aggressively fighting the 700-acre West Mullen fire burning north of Superior, with new resources still arriving. Several homes remain under mandatory or voluntary evacuation, but so far, firefighters have managed to steer the fire north and east of town and away from homes. News Director Sally Mock was on the fire this afternoon with Information Officer Pat McKelvey, who gave her this update.
So far, it continues to burn in a kind of a northeasterly direction across the ridge line and up above the community of Superior, and certainly not really threatening directly any residents right now. Last night was a little active, a little different situation. The fire did try to move downslope at night, coming down. That's expected. So we had an active night shift throughout the night. They did some burnouts around structures where the fire was trying to roll down. These are steep hills. Fire tries to roll down, and then what it does is it in that light fuel underneath the pine, it'll try to burn back up slope and then roll down again and burn back up. So they were burning the fuel out last night to stop that, to put an end to that.
And, of course, the concern right now is that the weather will change. We've got a front coming in with some freaky winds, and that could be a problem. And you were saying that could even be a problem even if the storm brings some rain.
That's true. Even if the cell is wet, and I haven't checked with the weather lately or with the fire behavior analyst who's monitoring that, but even if they are wet, and by that I mean a wetting rain, maybe even less, like 10%, that will bring some outflow winds that can, as you see how these drainages are lining up here, how that can push that fire down slope again towards this residential area.
It looks like you're getting more and more resources all the time. A bunch of hotshot crews are here now, and you've also, as you said, got 6 helicopters on the fire, so a pretty heavy attack.
We've been fortunate. There are not a lot of other fires that are competing for resources right now in this area. There's some other fires going, but there's still a lot of stuff in the system. We actually have 3 hotshot crews now on the fire. 2 got in last night and 1 this morning. So, yeah, our resources are coming in. This is not really an engine show either. Now, down here in this residential area, we'll use the engines on structure protection. But as you can see, the fire burning up in there, it's rough terrain, rough country. And so part of it right now is looking for a place to employ some of these ground resources that we've got. So the air show is pretty heavy. Retardant was running early today. 6 helicopters working. And then the shots down here working a line around the structures.
Well, we'll just see what the weather does and keep our fingers crossed.
Absolutely. The topography and weather, we've been saying all along, are keys to this fire. And you'll hear that a lot. We know that in wildland fire, certainly that's what it is. But when you get all these topographical features lined up the way they are, and then that weather, the cells that can come in, it's a pretty important factor.
Happens being with Pat McKelvey, the Fire Information Officer on the West Mullen Fire. Pat, thanks as always.
Thank you.
The Red Cross has set up an evacuation shelter at the elementary school in Superior. Also, the Superior Fairgrounds is taking any evacuated pets. State Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has closed part of the Clark Fork River from the Big Eddy fishing access site to Dry Creek so helicopters can safely dip water of the river to fight the fire.
And in other news from around the state, leaders from across Montana's public education spectrum met in Helena today to discuss shared priorities for improving student outcomes. It was the first Board of Education meeting of Governor Steve Bullock's administration. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce says the governor chaired the meeting and was mostly there to listen to ideas.
Members of the Montana Board of Regents, the Board of Public Education, as well as representatives from the Office of Public Instruction make up the full Board of Education. From the head of a third-floor conference room in the state capitol building, Governor Steve Bullock tells the board the framers of the Montana Constitution called for such meetings, and for a reason.
All the way from early childhood through post-secondary, it is part of the overall fabric of our educational system. And to share our perspectives and hear what one another is doing, I think is that much more essential.
He lists positive trends he's seeing in the state's education system: the implementation of full-day kindergarten, the lowering of the state's dropout rate, a greater emphasis on two-year post-secondary education. Then board members, representing these totally different educational realms from K-12 to the university system, each member has a chance to brief the governor about what they're doing and their priorities. For Regent member Paul Tuss, it's expanding research at Montana's universities. He says other Western states average more than double the amount of Montana's research spending.
If we look at those areas throughout the United States that are advancing from a job creation and economic advancement perspective, they are all areas that invest heavily in university-led research. We don't do a very good job, in my opinion, in Montana with respect to this.
Other board members talk about improving the experience for the state's adult learners and non-traditional students. Younger students receive a lot of attention, too. Superintendent of Public Instruction Denise Juneau says members are putting greater emphasis on the importance of early childhood education.
Just so that every child has access and opportunity to enter kindergarten being prepared to learn. And I think you heard it reflected both from K-12 advocates and post-secondary advocates.
And making sure that, you know, we're preparing our kids from 0 to 5 before they even hit the school system.
Governor Bullock also says he is hearing more about performance-based funding for teachers, especially in higher ed. The Board of Regents reached an agreement with state legislators and Bullock's office earlier this year called the College Affordability Plan. In exchange for more funding, Regents agreed not to raise tuition and to take steps to make a portion of that new funding for state colleges and universities distributed based on student outcomes.
We can have performance standards, expectations of what the taxpayers are getting for the dollars that they invest, and that we'll work on college completion, dual enrollment, you know, making sure that we have an educated workforce.
The governor says he hopes to convene the full Board of Education every 6 months to work on their shared goals, including legislative efforts. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
Scientists are studying the effects of global climate change, from the peaks to the valley floors in Glacier Park. They're also looking in the water and have concerns that climate change may be the straw to break the proverbial camel's back when it comes to native trout survival. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry has more on what some of the concerns are for native West Slope cutthroat and bull trout, and how management is changing to preserve these species.
Fisheries ecologist Clint Mulfeld with the U.S. Geological Survey says bull trout and West Slope cutthroat trout are adaptable. They've been adapting to environmental changes for thousands of years.
However, with existing stressors like invasive species and habitat loss, those things pose certainly some challenges to native fish, and climate warming is likely to exacerbate those existing stressors.
Mulfeld says a lot of those stressors are human impacts like dam construction. He paints a picture of the ecosystem looking back over weather data for western Montana from the past 100 years. He says they're seeing a threefold increase in the number of hot days over the summer and a loss of what adds up to about 1 month of cold days in the winter. He says local temperatures track global trends, but are increasing 2 to 3 times faster.
What's mainly happening is the warming trends that we're seeing are reducing the snowpack, and the spring runoff is coming out earlier. And what's happening after that is it's leading to a reduction in summer flows, which is then in turn increasing stream temperatures.
Bull trout and West Slope cutthroat trout are cold water dependent species. And by cold water, Mulfeld is talking about water that's less than 55 degrees Fahrenheit. He says the Flathead is unique as still having its native fish populations. However, Mulfeld says lake trout, for example, have been moving upstream from Flathead Lake into Glacier Park, and the once bull trout-dominated lakes in Glacier are becoming dominated by lake trout.
And so that's why, with climate change, you know, it's just even more urgent to develop proactive conservation and recovery programs to allow for these species to adapt to this changing climate. And they're definitely not going to, there's going to be some losers. We're going to lose some populations along the way.
Mofeld says a lot of the management focus now is trying to preserve the biodiversity that remains.
It's really Montana's true natural heritage. You know, they're Montana's true natives. And so, you know, and they represent a healthy ecosystem.
Plans to deal with habitat loss, hybridization, and invasive fish are among the tools Mofeld says managers have to help the species continue to adapt and evolve, or else go extinct. Katrin Fryett reporting from the Flathead.
The political world, both in Montana and nationally, is still reeling a bit from former Governor Brian Schweitzer's announcement last weekend that he will not run for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated next year by retiring Senator Max Baucus. Schweitzer was seen as a heavy favorite to win the seat and help keep the U.S. Senate under Democratic control. Rumors are flying about just why he chose not to run. In tonight's feature interview, Schweitzer talks with news director Sally Mock about those rumors and about the reasons he's given. Namely, he'd rather live in Montana than D.C., and the Senate is dysfunctional.
Nancy and I have a great life, and we volunteered for 8 years of service for the state of Montana. I'm a private businessman. I came from private business, and I've moved on with my life. In January, as many of you recall, We stepped in, a group of us, and we were concerned about the way the largest publicly traded company in Montana was being run, the Stillwater Mine. They had thrown huge sums, hundreds of millions of dollars into Argentina, which really had no practical capability of recouping the investment. And I was concerned that those jobs would be lost. And so we launched a hostile takeover, and now I'm chairman of the board of the Stillwater Mine. And, you know, there's 1,650 of some of the highest paying jobs in Montana. There's a lot of families that depend on the management getting it right at Stillwater Mine. And so, you know, it's another chapter in my life, and we've moved beyond that. We live at Georgetown, but we're not living at our ranch at Hope Creek. And we've got three wonderful children and great dogs and a good life, and we wish the body politic the best of luck in the future. I've said for some time that I didn't think I would fit in Washington, D.C. I don't like the kind of clothes they have to wear. I don't like traffic. I don't like the weather. And I really don't like it that it's a town that seems to be run by the corporate interests and the lobbyists. And unfortunately, the people who do get elected, they spend most of their time on the phone trying to raise enough money to get reelected. And if your primary concern is about getting reelected or elected, and the money all comes from these special interests, you can imagine what the results are going to be, and I just didn't really want to be part of that.
Governor, you did run, though, for the U.S. Senate in 2000. What had changed for you between then and now?
Well, I think I've gotten a little smarter, and I've put in my 8 years. It was a wonderful job being governor of Montana. The best thing that ever happened to me was losing that election. Hopefully, I would have had the wherewithal to have gotten out of that that stinkhole after one term or so. But, you know, I talked to some very good friends of mine who were former governors, and they would call me and try and recruit me to run, but then they'd have to be honest with me. They'd say, well, Brian, we don't even like it here. You can't actually make big changes. A lot of these people who've been here now for decades, they're not even sure why they came here. And unfortunately, once you get here, then you have responsibilities. Oh, yeah, it's to your country and to your state, but you've got some 50 or 100 people working for you, and they all have families to raise, and they're all your friends. You pick them to work for you, and gosh, and when it comes time for re-election and you say, oh, I think I want to go back to, you know, pick the state, you know, all the people around you say, oh, gosh, you can't do it, please, please. And then you have all of your political supporters and people that trust you and believe that you're doing a better job than someone else would do. They all go after you. And I got plenty of those calls. And as you know, there was a draft Brian Schweitzer movement. And I told people, look, when I got out of high school, I had a draft number. Fortunately, it was something like, 305. So the likelihood of me getting drafted then was very little, and it's less now. So we're very happy with the non-decision we made, really. We didn't decide to run for the United States Senate. There were a lot of other people making that decision, and we continued to say no. And you know, I've definitively said, no, we're not running for the United States Senate. Nancy and I have a life to live, and I want to live my life in Montana. I'm 57 years old, and I did a little math on the back of an envelope. Probably I got another good 20 years where I can ski and hike and snowmobile and fix fence on my own and hunt and fish. And who knows? You know, life is uncertain, and let's hope I get 20 more years. And if I ran for the U.S. Senate, well, there's a year and a half running, and you'd be on a plane all over the country raising money. And then there'd be 6 years living in Washington, D.C. That's effectively one-third of the good years I've got left for hiking and camping and fishing and hunting. And I like our life, and we love Montana. We love the people of Montana. I don't like traffic. I go to other places, and I get on those roads, and I just look at those people and wonder how they can live this way.
Governor, let me run by you some of the rumors that have come out about why you aren't running. As you know, when people make decisions like this, the rumor mill...
Let's shut you off right there. When people make decisions, I never made a decision to run for the United States Senate, so there was no decision not to make. This is all yammering. I have been governor for the last 8 years, and every activity that I've had, for the first time in the history of Montana, you had a governor who every single day posted his schedule for the day in advance. The reporters were able to ask me any question, anytime, anywhere. My door was always open. Unlike all governors previous to me, I didn't even have a key to my door. And whatever meetings I had, the reporters wandered in and wandered out. When I ran for governor, I said I will be the most transparent governor in history. And every year when we did our taxes and we figured it all up, and then we'd give one copy to the IRS and we gave one copy to all the members of the press. We've been very transparent, and I'm the first governor in recent history who ran for office without taking any political action committee money. And we lived our life in a bubble, and we are no longer in a bubble. We're private citizens, and we're moving on.
Well, let me just run through some of the yammering, okay? And one of the yammers about your non-decision is that you were not going to get enough support from Senators Baucus and Tester.
Well, I don't know anything about that. Somebody has said that as well. But look, I don't know. I know that they're both voters in Montana, and they hopefully they I could have convinced them to vote for me just like anybody else. But there isn't the support that you need from any particular politician. When I ran for governor, I'll bet you everybody that had been elected for office in Montana didn't vote for me. All the insiders and Helena, they all looked at each other and said, who the heck is this farmer? Why would he think he could be governor of Montana? Why, I've been elected for, you know, whatever, fill in the blank numbers of terms. I've been on X committee. I know all the lobbyists. Boy, I know everything about government. What would some farmer from Whitefish know? And so I didn't let it worry me then, and if the insiders, if they were concerned, because I tell it straight, look, oftentimes Republicans disagree with some of the ideas I've had, and I've had Democrats who disagree with some of the ideas I've got. And so, it's a dysfunctional system back there, and I just wasn't interested in being part of it.
Given your aversion to that system and to Washington, D.C., Governor, I assume that rules out any future presidential run? The president obviously has to live in D.C.
I've got a couple of years to think about that. I just know that being part of a legislative body that their primary purpose is to get reelected wasn't for me. I kind of like the system of having term limits. I like it that a chief executive you do your level best, you serve for two terms, and you're not inhibited by having to raise money and continue to curry a favor with special interests forever and a day. I like it that there's term limits for chief executives. I like it that I was able to serve just two terms. You've only got a certain amount of time to accomplish as much as you can for the people of Montana and then get out. I like that system.
Governor, there have been, as you know, recent stories in Politico and in the Great Falls Tribune questioning your ties to two possible dark money groups.
Yeah, this is silly. I read the whole article, and what the article said is Brian Schweitzer was governor of Montana, and some people who have been donors of Brian Schweitzer's are also donors of a lot of other political groups and candidates all over the country. They also went on to say that some of these people who have been political donors of mine that I know, that they have formed a committee, and that that committee didn't do any politics in Montana. That's what's been reported.
But Governor, it's also been reported, and the two groups we're talking about is one called a Council for Sustainable America and the other American Sustainability Project, did have close ties to you. Some of these people are your friends. Some have donated to your campaigns, and there's no evidence of what these groups actually did. That's also in those articles.
Yes, and also in those articles, there's no evidence that they spent any money in politics in Montana.
Did they, to your knowledge?
And furthermore, these groups were formed after I was reelected governor. I was already term limited. I wasn't running for anything when these groups were formed. And I suppose if you were to look at contributions of people all over the country, some people give money to the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee. They give money to people that are running for the Senate. They give money to people in the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee. They give money to Emily's List. They give money to conservative and liberal groups all over the country. But there's no evidence that this group, I don't have any evidence, and nor have I seen any evidence, nor has anybody presented any evidence, that this group, which apparently is involved in raising some money, has spent any money on politics in Montana.
But what do you think?
Let's make it very clear. As I read it in the Great Falls Tribune, these groups weren't even formed until after I was elected to the last office that I was running for.
But, Governor, what do you think of these groups? Because they clearly aren't what they say they are. They're fronts, aren't they, for political fundraising? And shouldn't they be upfront about that? I mean, that's the whole complaint about Citizens United and so on.
I don't know that anybody's found this group, according to the Great Falls Tribune article, has spent any money on politics in Montana. So,
but that wasn't my question. My question is what you think of these groups per se.
Well, I can't say anything about this group because I don't even know what they spent their money on. So, I believe that we ought to have a system so that we don't need big money for people to get elected and reelected. I think we ought to have a publicly funded system like they have in a lot of other countries and they have in Arizona, for example, where you as a candidate, you need to raise money from X number of people, small contributions to demonstrate that you have a wide ring of support. And then if you raise a certain amount, then there's matching funds that come from the government. And those matching funds would be used for advertising on the airwaves, which the government owns already. And then we wouldn't need tens of millions of dollars. You wouldn't need a $1 billion presidential election or $30 or $50 million for a Senate race in Montana.
One final question for you, Governor, or actually two. One, you're not going to change your mind, I assume. And two, is there a Democrat you personally would like to see get in the Senate race?
Oh, I think that there's a lot of good people in Montana, and we'll be well represented by whoever the people of Montana chooses. And no, I'm not changing my mind. Thank you.
Governor, thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
All the best. Bye.
In tonight's weather forecast, for west of the Divide, tonight will be partly cloudy with a slight chance of rain showers. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty winds, heavy rainfall, and lightning. Lows will be in the upper 40s. Tomorrow, expect rain showers and a slight chance of thunderstorms. Some thunderstorms may produce gusty winds, small hail, heavy rainfall, and frequent lightning. Highs will be in the upper 80s. For central Montana, tonight calls for cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and lows in the lower 50s. Tomorrow will be mostly cloudy with a slight chance of thunderstorms. Some thunderstorms may be severe. Highs will be in the mid 80s. And for southwest Montana, tonight expect mostly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and lows in the mid 50s. Tomorrow will be mostly cloudy. Thunderstorms are likely and may be severe. Highs will be in the upper 80s. And now for the editorial comments of Dan Gallagher.
This is Dan Gallagher with Veterans Viewpoint. To be or not to be, Hamlet asked rhetorically, whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing end them. Suicide is at the final plea for help, a desperate call for recognition, the ultimate acknowledgement that things will get no better and that ending life is better than enduring it, or a concluding statement of defiance against a life flooded with hurt, a closing act of taking authority over the world. Or is it an act of true nobility, as Shakespeare asked? Or in the case of the frighteningly large number of contemporary soldiers and veterans who are taking their own lives, could it be a tragic application of the code of the warrior, echoing notes of both strength and surrender? Whatever the driving force behind it, suicide among our soldiers and veterans has reached epidemic proportions, especially here in Montana. And the dual question that the military, veterans advocates, and all American citizens in whose name these soldiers served and fought must urgently find an answer to are these. Why is it happening, and what can be done to stop it? Now, a recent story by Troy Carter in the Bozeman Daily Chronicle offered some pretty shocking data. For instance, the Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services reported that in 2010, the rate of veteran suicides in Montana, 66.5 suicides per every 100,000 people, was nearly five times the overall national suicide rate. And in Montana, which has the third highest overall suicide rate of all states in the Union, the suicide rate among veterans was three times higher than the state's overall rate. All sorts of why questions spring to mind. Why would someone who had witnessed combat deaths and survived the horror of war later choose to employ that core horror to end his own life? Surely a situation where so many others died and in which ending life was considered acceptable, even expected, coming out alive must seem a divine gift, something even more precious to a veteran than to those who never had to experience war. Yet suicide runs strongest in the veteran community. After enduring war, what in civilian life could possibly compare to war to such an extent that the veteran would find it unendurable? Why is veteran and soldier suicide more common among veterans of Vietnam and Iraq, Afghanistan, than it was among previous generations of veterans? Oh, sure, it existed prior to the 1960s, but it was certainly not as prevalent as it has been among veterans of the last 50 years. And no, this statistic is not merely a tracking deficiency. The numbers truly are greater now than then. Could some of the reason for the change in numbers be due to how we approached war prior to Vietnam? We sang about it, we made it heroic, and we sterilized its ugliness for public entertainment. And with our military macho code, we told those veterans who carried the war through life in their minds to suck it up, be a man, get over it. Who knows? Maybe that attitude actually helped keep some veterans alive back then. Of course, it's always easier to endure such ugliness when there's a noble cause behind the effort and when we're on the winning side, and we always used to assume that the American cause was noble. And we were always on the winning side from the days of the Revolution through the World Wars and Korea. And everyone loves a winner, especially the winners. Maybe that's part of the mix. We just aren't fighting winnable wars anymore. And finally, why is the suicide problem among veterans so severe in Montana under the beautiful big sky? I can't answer that one, although some people who deal with it say that it has to do with our economy, a Western culture that eschews psychological counseling, a greater reliance on alcohol to self-medicate, and the distance to facilities whose job is to help veterans. Personally, I think that the limited VA presence in the state is high on the list of reasons. So, what can be done? Well, obviously, acquiring more services and facilities to care for veterans should be part of any solution, as would a more user-friendly veterans assistance process. The current method is an outrage and a disgrace. Providing returning veterans with reemployment and educational and family wellness programs and opportunities seems a good place to start. The current issue of veteran soldier suicide has a multitude of causes and would-be explanations. Multiple redeployment and the erosion of trust and stability being among those, I think, at the top of the list. And war itself, its very nature, likewise sets the stage for the thought processes that might make suicide seem a preferred resolution for soldiers and veterans filled with hurt. But whatever the cause and whatever the affected soldier veteran's problem, the self-inflicted deaths of so many of those who our country has sent to war must become a major issue for our government and our people. No matter what the cost to find some degree of solution, the cost to our society and our heritage, if this problem continues to run amok, is much, much greater. And this is Dan Gallagher with Veterans Viewpoint.
Dan Gallagher is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Sarah Jovetich.
And I'm Courtney Anderson. Thanks for listening, and please join us tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.